I was always fascinated by the radio. I was just one of those kids that was fascinated by it. And I was so into it. I was probably 5 or 6 when my mother bought me a transistor radio. And I used to bring that to bed. And I would put it under the pillow so that I could listen to the radio. And many a night I'd wake up and there'd be static, because in those days, RTE used to, there were no pirates. RTE used to finish at 12 o'clock. And I remember Pat Kenny, a very youthful Pat Kenny, presenting, I think it was Night Bus on RTE Radio 1. Well, RTE Radio, because there was no 2FM in those days. So we're talking in the mid-70s here. And then it was something that I just loved. And then the pirates started to come on the scene in Limerick back about 1977. And we had Capital Radio in the city. And then the station that probably did it for me was associated with a local newspaper, the Limerick Weekly Echo. So you had Limerick Radio Limerick Weekly Echo, RLWE, and they had a fabulous lineup. And there was a great reaction and interaction, and they understood who they were talking to. And I understood that they were talking to me, and I related to it, and I related to the music. And so that's when I really got into it. And then I remember I was fascinated by it. And of course, in those days, nobody knew where the pirates were broadcasting from, if you remember. And it was always kind of wonder where they are. And it was just a fascination. I listened, and then Capital, I used to listen a bit to Capital Radio. And then this is gospel truth. I was watching television one day, watching RTE, and Pat Butler. Do you remember Pat Butler? Yeah, Pat was doing a radio program, and he was actually interviewed on camera in a radio studio. I'd never seen a radio studio. I'd imagined what it was like and whatever. And he demonstrated how to cue a record, bring it to the first sound and bring it back, you know, 3/4 ways. And I thought, wow. And from that moment on, I never played a record at home without cueing it up. It sounds so sad, but that's a fact. And I used to do then, I used to move on. From that, I moved on to presenting my own radio programs in the front room. So I was gathering records as I went along, but it didn't matter what the record was. It was just a record. And I used to do little mock-up radio programs. So that's how it all started.
And the first station you actually got involved with then was Radio Limni, and very famous station in Limerick radio history. But you were very young indeed. Yes. So how did you manage to persuade them to take you on?
Again, there's a little story in that I had pretty much been captivated by what John Frawley did on RLWE.
He was on RLWE as well.
Yeah, that's where his radio career, in inverted commas, started. And then he was hugely popular. And do you know how he got the name John the Man?
No.
Back in 1978, Grease was a big movie. And John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John had a hit with You're the One That I Want. But because Travolta's voice was so high-pitched, no one knew whether it was himself or Olivia Newton-John were singing, right? And so he called him, that's John the Man now. And that's Olivia the Woman. And so that's how he got the name John the Man.
Really?
Absolutely, yeah. As a man says, not too many people know that. But that is actually how he got the name. But I was captivated by that. And then when he opened, what happened then was he was removed, right? I'm not going to go into the story as to why he was removed, but it's a great story from RLWE. And there was protests in Limerick. There was people marched to bring back John the Man. And they didn't. So he said, fine, I'll open my own radio station. So he did. And he opened Radio Limni. And then that's where I listened to. And then he gathered a bunch of really incredible individuals who would never have seen the inside of a radio studio. But he knew all the characters in town and the different things they could bring, and they all related to various different audiences across the city, and indeed out into the county as well in latter years. John Frawley grew up in a place called O'Curry Place in Limerick. So did my mother. And his mother and my grandmother were great friends. So I knew the family. And I used to spend a lot of time with my grannies. And his kids would spend a lot of time with their grannies. And so we got to know each other as children. But I would never have allowed my interest in radio to interfere with that, or vice versa, because I didn't think that at my age that I could get a gig.
How old were you at this stage?
I was, myself and the Frawleys would have been playing together from kind of 8, 9, 10, 11, you know, that age. But then as time moved on, and what happened was my father was involved in entertainment in Limerick on a part-time basis. And one Christmas show that he was involved with had a troupe of dancers. And one of the dancers was married to a fella called Martin McLaughlin. And Martin McLaughlin used to present a rock and roll program, originally on Big L, one of the other radio stations, but had moved to Radio Limni. And I got to meet Martin at these concerts because he'd call up every night to collect his wife, Anne. And Martin, unfortunately, is no longer with us. And I got telling him that I was interested. And so he said, well, sure, why don't you come down with me some night? At the same time, I was a big listener to another man who's passed away, Dr. John Maloney. He's not a doctor. He used to call himself a doctor of music. And I got to know him through listening. And I used to win prizes on various programs. But he worked in a record shop and I got to know him. And at the same time, he kind of said, sure, why don't you come in sometime? So I ended up going into the studio with John Maloney and with Martin McLaughlin, answering phones and just generally hanging around. And John Frawley arrived in one night and said, young Sweeney, what are you doing here? And all this kind of stuff. And that's where it started. And then one night, John Maloney rang me. There was no mobile phones. So he rang the house phone. I was only 13, going nearly 14. And he said, listen, I'm trying to contact John. I can't. John Frawley. He said, I'm after hurting my leg at work. I'm in the hospital and I can't make the program. He said, is there any chance, he said, that you'd let him know? So I had to hop up my bicycle, cycle to John's house. I lived on the north side. He lived on the south side. But just in case, I put a few little singles into a plastic bag and put them on the carrier. And I went up to the house, rang the doorbell, and one of the lads answered, said, oh, how are you? Come in. I said, actually, I'm looking for your dad. You see, so John came downstairs and he said, what's the story? And I said, John Maloney won't be able to make the programme tonight. He's after falling and hurting his leg or whatever. And he said, all right, okay, I better go down. I said, well, you know, if you want, like, you know. And he looked at me and said, what age are you? I said, I'll be 14 next week. He said, Jesus, he said, your mother will kill me. I said, no. He said, that's slave labour. That's child labour. I said, look, I'd love to do it. I said, you know, I know what to do.
You knew how to work the equipment.
I did, because I got to know different lads. Yeah. And they showed me how to, they saw the enthusiasm, I suppose, and they showed me. So I knew, and I remember a great old friend of mine, a great old mentor as well, Brian Cantwell, used to broadcast under the name of Brian Memory. Brian used to present a jazz program, and he used to let me lean over him and actually press the button to turn on the turntable and put up the fader and stuff. You know, simple, innocent days, fabulous. So I knew what to do, and he knew I knew what to do, and he knew I had the enthusiasm. So he said, your mother will kill me, but go on. And so I cycled off down and went on the air 5 days before my 14th birthday. And that was the start of it.
And what happened then? Did John Frawley keep you on in Radio Limni as on a kind of a part-time basis? You were in school, obviously.
He did, yeah. I think John Maloney was out for a couple of nights and I kind of said, look, I'll cover if you want. And he said, yeah, okay, that's fine. And so I did. And then...
Had your voice even broken at this stage, or did you sound really like a kid on air?
It was breaking. I have the recording. I must give it to you. If I can play it now, if it'll play. It was kind of like that, you know. And it hadn't broken fully, but it was on the way, if you know what I mean. But I certainly sounded, I'm sure, like a child. But I suppose that was part of the attraction then as well, is that I sounded so young. And I guess there was a lot of, would you hear your man, bless him, kind of thing, you know. And so I kind of probably played to that a little bit too. And then I started filling in for other people, and then he gave me a full-time job. And I remember him calling me one day, ringing me at home and saying, will you come in and see me? And I said, I will, yeah. So he said, come in at whatever time. So I did. And he said to me, I'm going to get into trouble over you. And I said, you're not going to get into trouble over me. He said, I am. He said, you're only a child. He said, and I shouldn't be, you know. And of course, I was highly indignant because I was 14 now. and he said, I can't have you working here for free. And I said, of course you can. And so he decided he was going to pay me £5 a week. And he wrote me a cheque every Friday for £5. Right. How fair is that?
Very fair. And you were obviously doing regular shows at that stage, were you?
Yeah. What did I start doing? Weekends, I'd say. Oh, that's right, Sunday afternoon I used to do. And then I think definitely Sunday and maybe Saturday. There was a guy who used to do breakfast on Saturday morning, Colin Heffernan. And Colin was working in Wang at the time in Limerick. And more often than not, he would not be available on a Saturday morning. And so I covered that as well. But my first programme was called SOS, Sounds of Sweeney. And I used the ABBA SOS as my theme song. Bring it in at the old piano roll and let you know. So yeah, I was doing regular bits and pieces, yeah.
And what was the technical setup like at the time then, Ger, studio facilities and transmission? Only AM, I presume, at that stage, or was FM starting as well?
FM had started for some people, but John was never an early transitioner. So it was, we had an old KW Vanguard, I think was the name. And where I started with them, they were in Cecil Street. And the building has been revamped now, but it was an old shack of a building. But from about halfway up the stairs, you'd hear the buzz of the transistors and the valves. On the transmitter, and it was all done from there. And it was a quarter wave dipole that they used to run from the building across to where the old tax office used to be, and that's what got the signal. And you wouldn't hear him in parts of County Limerick, but you'd hear him in Kilkee because we were right beside the river, and the river used to carry the signal down. So it was AM, there was no FM.
But AM covered the city and then, I suppose, parts of probably West Limerick and West Clare, I presume, no?
Yeah, well, as I said, down along the estuary, yeah, you would have down around Kildysert and Lebesheta and Kilkee and places like that, you certainly would. It would cover the county, but don't forget, I couldn't even tell you what wattage we were putting out or how many, but the French stations used to come in at night time when it got dark during the winter time. And at one point, he actually used to close the radio station down between 7 and 9 because there was so much interference. And I know that was probably because there wasn't anyone to fill that and whatever. And he used to come back down himself at 9 o'clock and he'd kickstart the whole thing and he'd go on and he'd do his late night programme himself. But there was a lot. So yeah, in those early days, reception wasn't 100%. Around the city, yeah. But then you had Shannon Airport to worry about and all of that kind of stuff. And you had to be very careful with what you did. So the studio itself was very... one thing that I remember about it was the floor dipped. And if you didn't actually tiptoe around, if you had to walk like a ghost or else the record that was on jumped, right? And you'd hear it regularly. And you had a very small mixing desk. I can still see it. I have pictures of it at home somewhere. I think they're in my mother and father's attic. I'll dig them out. It was about, you can't see it now, but it's about what? There was probably 9 or 10 channels on it and a master switch on it. We had a big meter at the top of it that was, it looked like something like an ESB meter or whatever, but it was obviously telling us how, you know, not to distort and whatever. We had 2 tape decks. We had 2 record players, 2 decks, and that was it.
And it was a very unique station, Ger. I remember listening to it in Limerick myself, visiting as a teenager. And I mean, the style of John Frawley, John the Man, was pretty unparalleled, I'd say, on many other radio stations. It really was unique.
It was. And it was probably the first time that there was a conversation held between a radio person and an audience. He used to talk to them. And that was the attraction. And his style was one of, if you remember Brendan Grace's role in Father Ted, I'm having my fun and whatever about you. And it was completely about providing a service that he enjoyed providing. But he knew, like he was a snooker player, he was a bread man, he was a singer, he had done so many different things in his life and he knew so many different people. He knew how the city particularly ticked and he was able to tick those boxes and he was able to respond to what he felt they needed. And everybody that he brought in, we were never given a brief. We were never told how to do something or how not to do something. Everybody brought something different to the table. And like I often talk to former colleagues and we think there's a book in it. number one, there's a play in it. But where would you get? You'd need savagely good actors to play the roles of the people that we had there. We had such fun times.
And you moved on then to City Centre Radio in 1985, I think you said, before we started. And that was a very different type of station. Again, I remember City Centre Radio, CCR, a lot slicker, I suppose, than Radio Limni would be the maybe one way of describing it, perhaps under the influence of some of the Dublin stations that were beginning to make big money and things at the time. So how did you get into CCR and how did that change come about?
The change came about, very honestly, I got fired by John Frawley for something that I didn't do. And I'm glad to say that before he died, he lived in Galway. And I was in Galway, we'll talk about that in a minute, but I was in Galway broadcasting. And I was on air and I got a phone call from the partner that he was living with at the time. And I was stunned to hear her voice. And she said, we're actually living in Galway now. John travels up and down to do his programme. And she said, will you come across and see us? And I said, I will. And I did. And the first thing he did was apologise. And he said, I didn't realise what was going on. And you got caught in it. And he said, I've always regretted it. And we're family friends as well as being everything else. And so I said, done it, dusted. Let's forget about it. I'd forgotten about it a long time ago. It hurt at the time. So anyway, yes, I got fired. And I said, fine. I cycled up the road. I was sitting on the bike. I would have been about 17 or, yeah, I did 4 years with him. So I would have been 17. And I had done my, I was 1985. So I cycled up the road. He was in Sexton Street. We were broadcasting in Sexton Street at the time across from where I went to school. So I cycled up Sexton Street and knocked on the door of CCR and said, now lads, I'm here. Not in that way, but I just went in and said, look, here's my story. I was with the lads down the road. That is no longer the case. And, you know, here's my demo tape and here's a little note saying what I have done. And Jim Kavanagh, I spoke to at the time, and Nora Devine was there. And they kind of were very, well, yes, yeah, yeah, well, we'll have a look at this and we'll certainly get back to you at some point and blah, blah, blah. I said, look, that's fine. Thanks very much. Hopped on my bike, went home, and within 40 minutes, there was a phone call. Could you work tonight? So I did, and that was it. So I did a nightly program, I think, there. I think I did something like 7 to 10 or something like that. I went in and did 5 nights a week. But again, like everything else and everybody else, I was in the radio station as often as I possibly could. And so if something needed to be done, it was done and that was it. So
were you more of a regular with CCR then? Were you doing quite full-time hours there almost? Or were you on, you said you were on almost nightly?
Oh yeah, I never worked full-time with them because you might get paid 1 week and then you mightn't get paid again for another 6 months. It was never about the money. You know, really, it never was. And anyone that's been involved will tell you that. And so I always like to pay my way. And even when I was living at home with mum and dad, I had a job and that was my full-time job. So I was working during the day. I was lucky that I worked with Avis in Shannon and we worked a great shift. We did 12-hour shifts, 6 to 6. But we worked five and a half days 1 week and we worked 1.5 days the other week. So it was a fabulous shift. So it meant I was always finished at 6 o'clock so I could be in Limerick and have and do my programme. And then on the time I was off, I was in there during the day. So, but it was never full-time. I was hanging out. That was it.
And what kind of a station was CCR from your memory? Obviously very different style, as I said, to Radio Limni, more of a pop music station, if I remember correctly.
Absolutely. And I learned so much from Radio Limni about the one-to-one. Okay. But then I learned so much about music and music radio when I went, because like they had turntables that were activated by the fader. They had fader starts, right? They had like speakers in the studio that when you open the microphone, the speakers went off. We never had that in Radio Limni. We had a radio in the corner that was always on. So if that was on, you were on. You know, simple. We had mini disc players. We had ads on individual cassettes.
No cart machines.
Oh, not at all. Perish the thought. Never.
It wasn't that good.
No, it wasn't. But it was so high tech. And like it like the studio, I think you said to me that you had been in there. The studio, the broadcast studio, was away from reception. And you had to walk through a little interview room and in a little corridor into the studio. So you were in a bubble, but you had a glass window like they had in the real radio stations that you could see out into the, you know, the foyer. So you had all that. I met different characters then. We were all of an age. There's one of my closest friends today I met there. He'd be Des McCullough. He worked under a name of Brian Johnson. In those days, people often had pseudonyms because they didn't get paid at the radio station, but the state made sure they got paid, if you know what I mean. And Ger Bradshaw was there. Bradshaw has to be probably one of the most uniquely professional people that doesn't have to do anything to make it all go right. He was just a superb broadcaster and great to listen to on the radio as well. Will Leahy, who now works on 2FM or Gold or wherever it is he's at these days, Will started there. And I remember Will coming in and he was younger than me. I think he was even younger than me when I started on Radio Limni. And he was so enthusiastic and so full of it as well. It was great. Who else was there? Jim Kavanagh, as I said, was there. And Nora. And there was a few others that just don't come to mind at the minute, but they were the mainstay, you know?
Yeah. And I know you moved away for a little bit. You were in London and in the US and things for short periods, but the next Limerick station you were in was Hits 954. How did that differ from CCR? And I think Hits 954 came forward towards the end of the pirate era around 1987.
It was around that time. And I had been used to going into a studio and doing what I do. Okay, and when Hits 954 came to town, I was the first local voice to be employed. Now, by being employed, you got a regular program, but I was never there full time. And it was actually, it was staffed by former Radio Caroline jocks, and some of them had been out to Israel on the Voice of Peace. Some of them had worked in radio in the UK. So you had the likes of Stuart Clark, who we all know from Hot Press these days. There was a guy called Dave Shearer from close enough to Manchester, if I remember correctly. There was a guy from Australia, Mark Warner, who had done some time on the Radio Caroline as well. We had all those people, but it was the first time that I was introduced to a number of new things. Number one, we had a countdown clock for the intros. So it meant, and we had fader starts. So it meant that when you fired the fader, the countdown clock started and you knew you had 12 seconds to the vocals and you could do really tight stuff. We had cart machines, which I had never seen before. And then it was the first time that I came across the devil of radio playlists. Now, we weren't actually playlisted, but we had a rotation. And you were allowed one or two of your own choices in the hour. But you had to play an A list or a B list or whatever at certain times. And that was my first introduction rotations and clocks and playlisting. But again, I learned a huge amount because you were talking about lads that had done it and seen it. And it was fabulous just to soak up all that knowledge.
And do you think was this under the influence of the Dublin Super Pirates at the time with the likes of Radio Nova, Sunshine Radio, that this was an attempt to maybe repeat that in Limerick?
It might have been. I know that they were all from the UK and the people that were putting the money into it were from the UK. So you could say that, or you could say it's all they knew. Because what was happening with Nova and Sunshine and what was the precursor to 98FM, whatever that was?
Q102.
Oh, Q102, that's the one. So whatever was happening there, they were taking their lead from what happened in the UK 15, 20 years ago. And so maybe it's that they didn't know any better or didn't know any other way to do it. And you know what? Maybe that's why it didn't last as long as it should have lasted in Limerick, because maybe Limerick wasn't ready for that. But so it could have been either of those. Mm-hmm.
And 954, so obviously it was 954 AM. Yeah. It was maybe unusual for a station coming in the late 80s that it would model its name on AM, which was very much on the decline then. Presumably it was FM as well.
It was, absolutely. And a very good FM signal. They had it up on Gallows Hill where the golf balls are. If you at Bunratty, you look up and see the golf ball. That's in fact where most of the Limerick Pirates would have had their gear. But yeah, it was on FM as well. But yeah, absolutely, you're 100% right. Modelling it on an AM number was certainly something different.
And then your final station, I think, before the end of the pirate era, at the end of 1988, was in Galway, Coast 103. So how did you move to Galway and what were your experiences there?
As you mentioned earlier, you knew I was away. I was in the UK for a little time, and then I was in the States for a time as well. But each time I came back, even if I came back for a holiday, whatever station I happened to have been associated with, I would say, I'm home for the week. Do you want anything done? And they'd say, oh, yeah, we need this, 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 and it's done. And so I do that. And I came back from, I think it was the States, and Hits 954 was about to fold. But because they were all ex-Caroline lads, there was a radio station in Galway, which was also run by an ex-Caroline guy, and that was Keith York. And John Fulham would have been involved in that as well. And so they had been talking to each other. And they said, we're actually going to move everything to Galway. We're going to team up with the lads at Coast 103, but we're going to leave our transmitters on. And so we became one of Ireland's first pan-Western radio stations.
Regional style.
Basically, yeah. We were literally hitting from Sligo, I think, down as far as North Kerry. Which was lovely. And as it happened, I was working, as I said, for Avis. And the reason I was able to travel was because it suited them that I would take winters off and I'd go away. And I used to go to America and various places. And one of the places I was in was the UK, and I worked for Avis even in the UK when I was there. And so I thought, do you know what? I could get a job in Avis in Galway. So I did. And that's how I ended up being able to go to Galway, still be able to earn enough to live, and not have to depend on the radio, and still do my broadcasting. So I used to do the breakfast program there, and then I'd go across the road and I'd go to work for the day. And if they wanted something done at the night time, I'd do it as well. So it was all about the broadcasting, really.
And were you there when it closed down? I presume it closed down on the 31st of December, maybe the 30th, 1988. Were you there on the last day?
I absolutely was. I think my final breakfast program, I'm trying to remember, was maybe the day before, or could have been that day, depending on what way the calendar fell. But I certainly was there, yeah. And I was there afterwards because we set up a little school to teach people how to be radio presenters because we had nothing else to do. And John Fulham and Keith York and a few others, Steve Marshall was there. They kind of needed a couple of bob as well. So we set up a school saying, well, if you know, when these new radio stations come on, sure, why don't you come and learn how to do it? And there's some people involved in radio today that took that course. So, you know.
And looking back on it all now, Ger, just to finish up, what do you think it all meant and what was its importance, both to you personally and more generally for radio?
For me personally, it's meant the world. It has absolutely meant the world. It's a passion that I've never lost. It's a passion I don't think I'll ever lose. And I'm 52. And there's a big discussion going on at the minute about the future of radio. And you know, and I know, that the kind of radio that I love, the one-to-one radio, the having fun radio, the playing with people's mind radio, in a good way, is no longer. And I don't know, will it come back? But I think that, of course, the internet may be the reason for that. It probably is. I was only discussing a little earlier on, talking to somebody, and I was asking about, you know, their children. They don't listen to the radio. They listen to Spotify or YouTube or various things that I couldn't even pronounce at this stage. And so I wonder about the future of it, where the home is going to be or what people. So for me, it's meant the world. But I've also been quoted as saying, and I've meant it, is that I love radio, but I don't know how much radio loves me, because it's so difficult. It's so difficult to make a living. There's no money in radio. That's the difficulty. So it has been good to me, but I've always done what I started off doing, having a job and then working for the radio on the side.
So whether it was the pirate era or the legal radio era, you never really made it into a full-time career because you essentially couldn't. Financially,
there came a time when I did, for a period. I left Clare FM in 94 because Radio Limerick asked me to move in, and they more than doubled my salary, so I was able to. But unfortunately, I wasn't able to stay there because I just couldn't. And it's not the operators that are there now, it was a different operator.
Yeah. So just to come back then to the pirates and their importance, Ger, more generally, for radio in general, what do you think?
It gave people something that local radio gave it in abundance when it came legally, and that is that it made each area important and it made each community feel important. It also, if you take a look just at the death notices, and the death notices were started by John Frawley. And the reason that he started it was not to be morbid, but he knew. He knew his audience and he knew his area. He knew that there was parts of Limerick didn't get newspapers until maybe 12 o'clock in the day, because in those days, you know, things were slower. Mm. And he basically started the death notices to give people in areas a heads up. Now, in rural areas, as you know, if somebody dies, everybody knows about it. But if it's four parishes away,
you mightn't.
Exactly. And so that's why he started with the death notices. So it started a community, and people began to understand that what happened in their community, in their parish hall or their community centre, was talked about on the radio. So it's important. And it gave people a sense of pride in their area. It gave them a sense of importance, which they should have had anyway. And it just brought communities together. And it also showed people, no more than legal local radio when it started, it allowed people on the east side of the county to understand and know what was happening on the west. So pirate radio did that in a smaller scale, and it brought other people's business into our world as well. And we're a nosy nation, so it was always great to know what was happening.